ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिपोथितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणं विना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. या निशा सर्वभूतानां तस्यां जागर्ति संयमे यस्यां जागृतिभूतानि सा निशा पश्यतो मुनेः. Chapter 2, 69. Ya Nisha Sarva Bhutanam Tasyam Jagarti Samyami Yasyam Jagrati Bhutani Sa Nisha Pashataha Muneha. Famous verse. Let's look at the grammar first. Ya Nisha, that which is night. Nisha means night. Ya Nisha, that which is night. Sarva Bhutanam, for all beings. Sarva all Bhuta beings. Sarva Bhutanam, genitive plural. Ya Nisha, Sarva Bhutanam. Tasyam, in that night. Tasyam, so ya, tasyam. So that which night, that which is night for all beings, in that. So you would say in English you'd say, in that which is night for all beings, because nisha is feminine, right? Feminine nominative singular. And tasyam is in the locative feminine singular. So they write it differently than we speak in English. So you would say, taking the locative, in that which is night for all beings, jagarati samyami, the one who has control of their senses, samyami, masculine, some samyamin. So the samyami, the one who has control of their senses, for that person is jagarati, is awake. Okay. Now, Swamiji in his Bhasha commentary on this talks about this word samyami a little bit more than Shankara does. Samyami, that samyak means has complete control. Samyak, very well controlled. Yama means to control or to be able to hold the reins in. So it's a word that's used in reference to your mind and your sense organs. One who has that complete control is one who has wisdom, a jnani. Because otherwise the ananda is outside for you. If there's no jnanam, if there's no knowledge, then really you can have control for a while, but eventually, you know, because the fullness, what you seek, the self, really, you know, the world is holding yourself, and that causes you to pursue it. The world is holding through projection the ananda, which is yourself, and so you're not able to have a natural. Kind of a natural control. The samyami is the one who has that very natural control, a control that's brought about through assimilated knowledge, right? So samyami, very well controlled because their atmajnana, their self-knowledge is assimilated for them. And so the ananda that they seek, that they sought, they have. The fullness that they had sought, they have as their own being. And so the pravritti, or the impetus, that the thing that impels the mind to seek ananda in the world isn't there, right? You're not being impelled to become full because you're already full. When you're already full, then to withdraw the sense organs, there's nothing at stake. because the projection isn't there. It's much easier to withdraw the sense organs. So here, Samyami, the one who can withdraw the sense organs, the one for whom the world is not a challenge in that way, I need this to be happy, I need that to be happy. So that one who has control of their sense organs and mind because of their knowledge. So for that person, that which is night for all beings, for that person, right, it goes, Yanisha Sarvabhutanam, in that which is night for all beings, the Samyami, the one who has control of their senses, has Jnana Nishta, okay? For that one is awake. In that which is night to all beings, that Samyami, that one, Jagarati, is awake. Yasyam Jagrati Bhutani, in that which Jagrati there is from Jagrat, Jagrati is the form from Jagrat, is the third person plural. In that which Jagrati Bhutani, in that which the beings are awake, right? In that state which the beings, Bhutani, Jagrati, are awake, Sa Nisha, that is night, Pashyatoho Munehe, for the Muni, for the one who has wisdom, who sees? Pashyataha sees what? The Paramatma. Paramartha Tattvam, okay? The absolute reality. So that Pashyataha is a present participle, genitive singular. Pashyataha Munehe, genitive singular. For the Muni, for the wise person, Pashyataha, who is seeing, right? Who has this vision, who is seeing. So what is being said here? That Krishna decides to bring this verse here is very interesting because he's just gone through so many verses answering Arjuna's question, you know, how does a wise man walk? How does he talk? What is a wise man like? But it's not that Arjuna's question is a good question and a sincere question. It's saying, if I were a wise woman, how would I be in the world? How would I see? How would I feel? How would I respond to others? You know? Can you describe that for me? What would it mean? And the idea which runs as a theme throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita, really, is that which is natural to a wise person, what they call sadhya, siddhi, it's an accomplished, just natural way of being for somebody who has nishta, jnana nishta, that way of being in the world becomes a sadhana for a seeker, for a mumukshu. So if the wise person is naturally kind, for instance, naturally has ahimsa, non-injury, if that seems to be a natural quality for a wise person, then the seeker will emulate that. You know, that will become a value for the seeker. Right? So all of the things that you see in a wise person or in your teacher that seems to exemplify what it means to have wisdom, those become values for the student. Right? And so, and that's also very, very natural for that to take place also, because what if your teacher had absolutely none of the values that you aspire to? I mean, it's kind of a strange situation. You know, the reason that you're studying, you're trying to gain self-knowledge is for something. You're not trying to gain self-knowledge for nothing. You're trying to gain self-knowledge for freedom, for moksha, for that sense of well-being. Is there anything about me that is free from all of the sukha-dukha, is free from all of the ups and downs of the world? Is there any sthana? Is there anything about me that is beyond all of that? Free of all of that? Is there anything that I can just, any place where my mind can just relax without fear? What is that? And now say, you go to a teacher for that and the teacher is just a mess. Always worried, always in fear, always, you know, always up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Well, you're not going to be feeling like you can really get the vision from that person because they themselves don't seem to have it, right? And so that's why what the teacher seems to embody, the student will emulate. You know, and Swamiji sometimes joke, you know, you fake it till you make it. You know, actually that's not bad. In cognitive psychology, that's actually very, very effective. Even if sometimes the quality that you really have a value for and an understanding for, your mind wants to go in a different direction, you pull it back. You pull the mind back because of a value for that quality and an understanding of the importance of that quality in reference to this knowledge, to gaining this knowledge. So that's all. I mean, all of this is so thoroughly discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. The relationship of the mind, basically, for the seeker, for the mumukshu, the relationship of the mind to raga dvesha, to my likes and dislikes. And the relationship for the seeker, the one who is gaining knowledge, how to handle this mind, how to hold this mind. So this is what Krishna, the Lord, has spent so many verses now, based on Arjuna's question, talking about how to neutralize the likes and dislikes in the state of one who has knowledge, for whom those likes and dislikes are neutralized. The jnani is being one who can pull, like a tortoise can pull in their limbs at will. Like that, the jnani can pull in the mind at will. You know, pull in the sense organs at will. The sense organs don't have the capacity to take you for a ride. So he's gone through so many verses describing all of this, and also describing the one who can't do that, and the sorrow that accompanies that inability to do that. So now, so many verses. And now at the end, he says, but even after saying all of that, in fact, you know, that which is night, you know, for all beings, it's in that night, the samyami, the one who has knowledge, is in that condition, the samyami sees. And in that which is night for the samyami, for the muni, the one who has the self-knowledge, in that state, all the beings are awake. And so after having explained all of this, he says, you know, the jnani knows the jnani. To know what it's like, really, it's what it was saying. Swamiji goes on about this. He has a lengthy commentary on this, very worthwhile reading. So he says, what it is to have knowledge, you can't imagine unless you have knowledge. Right? It's night and day. You know? What is night for one is day for the other. Right? What is night for that one is day for the other. And so it's a way of telling Arjuna, really, in spite of everything I'm saying, you can't really know what it is until you know. You can't really know what I'm talking about, really, until you yourself know. You know? And so with that, if we start really taking that apart a little bit, let me back up a little bit to say how Shankara deals with this verse. He says, that which is night for all beings, okay? He looks at it like this. Say, when it's dark out, you're not able to clearly distinguish one thing from another, okay? Because it's dark. And yet, some beings are able to wander around in the dark. Okay? So say now, it's dark out, but you're wandering around in the dark. That's how he looks at it. You're wandering around in the dark. What is the dark? It's the darkness of ignorance. The darkness of what ignorance? The darkness of ignorance of the Paramartha Tattvam. That's what he calls it. Paramartha Tattvam means the absolute truth. So those who are wandering around at night in the darkness of self-ignorance. Right? Means they're, but the idea here, it's not that they're just sleeping. You know, if you're sleeping, right, if you're sleeping, there's no problem because there's total ignorance, right? No problem there. There's, you're not sleeping. You're wandering around in the night, right? So you're sleepwalking. This was Swamiji. Well, you're sleepwalking or you're dreaming. It means there's no no understanding of what this world is that you're walking around in. There's no understanding of what you're walking in. There's no viveka there. So it's the night of ignorance. The night of what ignorance? The night of self-ignorance. So for the people who are walking around, all beings, for the most part, are walking around in the night, which is the darkness of self-ignorance. In that world of night, right, the jnani is completely awake. Right? Because for the jnani, there is no darkness of ignorance. And so the jnani is not walking around in that world, in the darkness of ignorance, which everybody else is walking around in. So for the jnani, the darkness is not there. But for all other beings, the darkness is there. Right? So you could say, for all beings, except for jnanis, except for the ones who have self-knowledge, all beings are walking around in the darkness of ignorance. And as all beings are walking around in that darkness of ignorance, the jnani is walking around in the light of knowledge. Right? And so it's a totally different vision. We'll see in a minute. And what she says for the other side, for that jnani, what is night for the jnani is what is day for the ajnani. Ajnani means the one who has ignorance. What is day for the ajnani, the world that they are awake to, that world the jnani doesn't even see. So what does that mean? For that world, the jnani doesn't even see. So, that's an interesting verse. What Swamiji was highlighting is that being the case, until you have knowledge yourself, you can't really know what it is like to be a jnani. Right? You can't know what it's like to be a jnani because you don't know. If you don't know, then you're not seeing what the jnani is seeing. And so let's look at the simplicity of it, really. It's if you're an ajnani, say, well, let me put it like this. Ajnani, jnani. Both of you have the same self-experience because there's only one self. Right? So both of you say, I am. And when both of you, the jnani and the ajnani, says, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, both say. Both are referring to exactly the same self-experience. Not the two self-experiences. Not that the jnani is referring to some other supreme self-experience and the ajnani is referring to some smaller self-experience. And they're both referring to exactly the same thing. So the ajnani says, I am a conscious being. So the conscious being that they're referring to, right? Because they have to be referring to consciousness, the being. They have to be referring to being. And they have to be referring to consciousness to say, I'm a conscious being. Okay, so what they're landing on there when they say that is the conscious being, which is exactly the conscious being what the jnani is referring to when the jnani says, I am a conscious being. There's only one conscious being that can possibly be referred to. There aren't two consciousnesses. Right? There's not two beings, there's not two consciousnesses. So the conscious being that is being referred to is identical, is the one without a second, in fact. But for the ajnani, that conscious being that is being referred to is superimposed on the physical body, so that that person who says, I am a conscious being, attributes the conscious being that they experience as themselves to be a product of this body. In other words, you would say, I am a conscious being because I have this body. When this body goes, I will not be a conscious being, right? And so the conscious being that you take yourself to be is now believed to belong to and be a product of the physical body. Or you can say, I am a conscious being, and I am a conscious being as long as this physical body is alive, and this physical body has a brain which allows me to think, so I am a thinking conscious being. Right? And so the conscious being that in fact you are is superimposed on the physical body, so now the physical body gains the quality of being the conscious being, and the conscious being that you are gains the qualities of the body, so of the body-mind. So the conscious being that you are becomes someone who's subject to death and becomes somebody who's thinking and feeling and emotional and this and that. So the superimposition all becomes one thing. However, well, you have to remember what's so critical here to understanding, to gaining this vision, is to understand that the conscious being that the jnani, that the ajnani enjoys, when the ajnani says, this conscious being, am this body, the conscious being that is their self-experience is Brahman. There isn't another, it's not like there's some other conscious being there. It's just because of ignorance. The me is superimposed on the body, mind, sense organs. Okay, so this is the reality of any being who doesn't know themselves. Right? Because the sense organs and mind are enjoying consciousness, and it's the sense organs and mind that have the problem. Why should the mind, which is always enjoying consciousness, not say, I am conscious? You know, it needs some viveka. We have to sift through that and recognize, oh, it is an object of consciousness. It does come and go. I don't come and go. We have to do a lot of teaching to make the mind see, oh, that's right. But initially, it doesn't see that at all. So it sees, I, the conscious being, am this body, and I am one of many experiencing this world, walking through it as a jiva, subject to birth and death. That is the reality of the jiva, of all beings. That is the night. That is the darkness of ignorance, of self-ignorance, that all beings are enshrouded in. And all of them enjoy that same vision. Right? Because they all enjoy their experience in the same way. They all have sense organs, they all have a mind, they all have a physical body. And the mind doesn't have self-knowledge, and so the mind takes the conscious being to be itself, etc. It goes on like that. And then, of course, then the big problem comes. There are many problems. One is I'm finite and subject to death. Another huge problem is that whatever the condition of the mind is, I am. So when the mind is unhappy, having a reaction of some sort and not getting your way, the mind becomes tense. And then the mind is sorrowful. Then I become sorrowful. Then somebody gives me something I want or something happens, the mind relaxes, I become happy. This is samsara. Happy, sad, happy, sad, happy, sad, happy, sad. This is the condition. This is the condition of life. This is why we call it samsara. That which is always changing. That's what samsara means. And this is the reality that beings live in. Right? This is not the reality, and this is darkness of self-ignorance, is not the reality that the jnani lives in. For the jnani, same self, same exact self. I am a conscious sentient being, ajnani, I am a conscious sentient being. But for the jnani, that viveka has taken place, the self-ignorance is gone. And so now, this conscious being that I am, that the ahankara lands on, you know, the I notion lands on the I, lands on that self. The I is landing on that self, which is changeless, always the same, always whole, always complete, the very sakshi of the mind, the sakshi of the sense organs, the sakshi of all experience, the one being that is the being of all beings. Right? The one self that is the self of all beings. The one self that is the self in which the whole creation exists. And so the jnani's mind, then, is awake to that self. That self that has been, because of viveka, has been differentiated from the body and the mind and the sense organs and all of the things that would function as upadis. If all of those things that function as upadis have been removed from the swarupa, from one's own nature, right, and then they become, if they're differentiated from one's own nature, then the nature that you are remains steady. It's not that it remains steady, it's that you recognize the steadiness of your own being. You recognize the changelessness of your own being. And the I rests there, right? The I rests there in that being, in that self, which is the source of all ananda that the mind has ever enjoyed anyway. Right? And so the mind enjoying that self then lives in the world. So one has a stable self. One recognizes the self as a stable self, which is the self of all beings. And the other recognizes that same self, because of ignorance, right, as being one in the creation, subject to death, gaining happiness from experiences in the world, gaining happiness and sorrow from experiences in the world. And so the vision is completely opposite. Right? One needs the world to be in a particular way to gain happiness. One is subject to birth and death. You know, one is subject to limitation. One is subject to seer sin, and the other is not. In reality, both are not. In reality, there's one self. What brings about the difference is not a difference, and there's no real difference there. The difference has to do with knowledge and ignorance. How the Ajnani perceives their experience, because there's no recognition of the self. Right? Let me put it differently. How the Ajnani perceives their experience, because there's no differentiation of their self-experience from the experiences that they have in their mind and through the mind and sense perception. Okay? Same self. Same self. Because for the Ajnani, that differentiation is there, that stable self is recognized as being the self of Ishvara. Because the self is not something that belongs to the mind or the sense organs or to the body. The self is something that is the very stable substratum of the entire creation. And so the mind that rests in that self enjoys that self, right, as a different perspective. They're both enjoying the same self. One has ignorance, and so takes a self to be itself. The other doesn't have that ignorance, and so basks in the stability of the self that they've differentiated. Experience of the self is the same, but the differentiation is lacking. This is the thing that sometimes can be hard to understand and is critical to understand. When I say like this, the experience of the self is the same for both. Okay? How can that be? Because say your mind, for the Ajnani, the mind is upset. Then you say, if I were to really draw out the sentence, say, I, who am a conscious, existent being, I, who am a conscious being, am upset. Right? Probably wouldn't go on and on like that, saying, I, who am a conscious being, but that's what you mean. I, who am a conscious being, am upset. Right? Ajnani would say, I, who am a conscious being, you know, illumine the upset mind. Right? What I want you to see there, what both say, I am a conscious being. One takes the upset or the condition of the mind to now be a quality of yourself. The other recognizes the stability of myself in the midst of the upset mind. For the Jnani, the mind is upset or it's not upset, the perceptions are whatever they are. Those are all taking place in stable, changeless me. The Ajnani has not made that differentiation. And so even they're referring to the stable, changeless me, because they will even say, I was so upset, and now, thank goodness, I'm feeling more peaceful. In both instances, what remains? The I, who am a conscious being, was so upset, but now I, the conscious being, am not upset. I'm at peace. Right? So what remains exactly the same in the experience is the conscious being. Conscious being hasn't, nothing's happened. Right? The changing experiences come and go. It's just that person, that mind, has not recognized, has not had this viveka. Right? Once that viveka is there, that discrimination is there, all of these conditions become part of Ishvara. They're part of the order, they're part of the whole. But for the jnani, that's how it is. There's nothing that ever happens to the self. The mind, knowing that, for the mind, the self is its refuge. Right? That changeless self that is the self of all beings, that is the self of Ishvara, is the refuge for that mind. And so that mind, reveling in the self, reveling in the self means that's the home. That's your home. So reveling in that self, abiding in that self, the world is experienced. What's included in Ishvara is experienced. What's included in the world is experienced means this world that I perceive through my sense organs, the physical body is experienced, the sense organs are experienced, the mind is experienced, the eye thoughts are experienced, the eye thought is experienced, all my knowledges and ignorances, all my relationships, everything that comes and goes, everything within samsara, everything within the creation that includes the jiva, all of that is experienced in me. The me that is changeless. And so that, the only difference between the jnani and the ajnani is the ignorance that causes the superimposition of that stable me. The stable me is exactly the same. That's why, you know, when you gain knowledge, the experience is often something like, you mean me? You mean I am Brahman? Why is it such a shock? Say, I am Brahman? Because you recognize that the I that you had taken yourself to be, there's no shift in the I that you had taken yourself to be. That is you. The I that you had, as an ajnani, the I that you had taken yourself to be is the I which is Brahman. It's just that this I that you have taken yourself to be is superimposed on the mind, and so you also take all the qualities of the mind to belong to it, and all of the qualities of the body to belong to it. And that's the problem. That's why you become a limited being. You haven't recognized that the me is stable and changeless. But you have recognized it as me. Just that it's not stable and changeless, that's all, because you've superimposed all of these other qualities on it. And so then you recognize in the midst of all of your experience, this me that has always been you, you recognize, I don't change. I never change. And I never have changed, and I never will change. That I, in fact, am completely free. Nothing ever stains me or touches me or changes me in any way. That I am whole and complete, and nothing can take that away from me. So the mind recognizing that becomes free. The mind never becomes free. The mind is free, never free in the sense that by its very nature it's always changing, it's always thinking. That's its swabhava, that's its nature. But it recognizes, I am free. It means the one I, the one who has this mind, I am free, I am whole, I am complete. And the mind relaxes into that fact. That is what the jnani is awake to, never asleep to. And that is what the ajnani is never awake to. Never awake to. At the same time, there is only one self there that's being recognized as me. For both the ajnani and the jnani. Why this is so critically, critically important is that we are often when we think of gaining self-knowledge or enlightenment or all of these big words, we're thinking of discovering a self that we're not. And actually, it's the recognition of the self that we are, is free. It's recognizing the nature of the being that you are. The being that is here is the very self of the mind, the very self of the body. The difference between the ajnani and the jnani is that the jnani can say, I am the self of the mind, I, and the self of the mind, and I am the self of my sense organs, and I am the self of my body, and I am the self of the rug, and I am the self of you, and I am the self of Ishvara. The jnani won't stop. But to be able to say that the ajnani will stop, the ajnani will say, perfectly, you know, I'm the self of my mind, I am the self of the sense organs. I am the self of the body. And that's where it stops. Mm. Therefore, I become, you know, there's one with that. I become one with that. Or a better way of saying it for the jnani is, myself is the body, myself is the mind, right? Myself is this body. Myself is this mind. Myself is these sense organs.
Who says that?
The Ajnani.
Okay.
Myself. But what's so good to understand, if I say myself is this body, see, for the Ajnani, myself is this, is the mind. Myself is the sense organs. Myself is the body. Myself is the world. Myself is you. Myself is you. Myself is Ishwara. I see myself as the very being of all of these things. But then I can go and say, but this is not me, and this is not me. This body is not me. I am this body. This body is not me. I am this mind. This mind is not me. Because the mind can't change me. It has no being apart from me. You know? The Ajnani can say, I am this body, but can't say this body is not me. Right? Could say, I can't say, I'm this mind. Both of us will say, I am this mind, but one can't say, this mind is not me. Right? Can you say both? Can you say, I am this mind, but this mind is not me? I am this body, but this body is not me? Why is it important to even talk like this? It's because to make it clear that there is no distance, there is no other substance. You know, like the clay could say, and the clay pot could say, the clay could say, I am the pot, but the pot is not me. Right? Because the clay survives the pot. Right? The clay is not dependent on the pot, but the pot is dependent on the clay. So what if the clay says, I am the pot? It's true. I am the pot. There's nothing there but me. I am the pot. But then it will say, but the pot is not me. Right? Because say you have a lump of let me drill it in a little bit. Say you have a lump of wet clay. I make a pot out of it. And the clay says, I am the pot, but the pot is not me. What do you mean the pot is not me? Well, let me change it into a plate. I am the clay, right? I am now the plate. So the pot, the clay has no dependence on the object. The object has total dependence upon the clay. Right? But look at this, even when we say it like that, it can be a little bit misleading. In truth, with the clay pot, there is nothing there but clay. Right? So I could, if I say, I am the pot, means there's nothing there but me, the clay. So if I say that in reference to here, now in reference to this body, I am this body, means there is nothing here but me. The conscious being which this body enjoys, I am the conscious being, the very existence, the very being, the very sentiency, the consciousness which this body enjoys. I am that. Right? I am this body. Right? But this body is not me. Right? This body can come and go, and I will remain. So now with every single aspect of identification, you have to be able to say that I am this mind. It means I am the self, the conscious being which every thought enjoys. Take the consciousness, take the being, the conscious being away from the mind, there is no mind. Yeah. So I am the conscious being, which is the mind. I am, so you know, you say, I, who I am the mind. But the mind is not me. It means there is no mind apart from me. I am the mind, but the mind is not me. Right? So can you see that yourself, now what does that ask you to do? What is it? It's an exercise for your mind. It means that your mind has to recognize that there is an experience, a self-experience of the conscious being that you are, that is invariable. The conscious being that you are is never not there. It is the very substance, the very core, the very being, the very clay of the pot of all experience. You can never, ever get rid of it. You can never cover it. You can never dim it out. You can't do anything. It is the constant. And so now your mind is being given the task to recognize the constancy, the constant versus the changing. Because if you notice that you're just from the standpoint of your mind, the thoughts are always changing. One thought is, you know, from associative thinking, one thought is replaced by the next, is replaced by the next, is replaced by the next. One perception, replaced by the next, replaced by the next. That's the whole samsara. That's the whole universe is like that. But that continual, multidimensional change that is endless samsara, right? I am its being. That endless changing samsara is taking place in the changeless being, which is me, which is not objectifiable, but which is the very self-experience of I. And so the jnani is awake to that. And being awake to that is not able now to see myself as a limited being, because I cannot go backwards to make my ahankara, the I notion, identified with the body and mind and sense organs once that ajnana has been removed. I can't make myself, it's impossible for a jnani to make themselves, their self-experience, changing. The mind experience will be changing. The experience of the physical body will be changing. What you perceive through your eyes, the sensory experience will be changing. That's all changing. But you cannot make yourself be changing because you've recognized yourself and you don't change. Mm-hmm. How can you get back? How can you bring back the ignorance to once again have that superposition? And so the reality that the ajnani is living in, the jnani can't get to that. The jnani can appreciate it. In the same way that once, say you were walking along at night and you mistook a rope for a snake. When somebody points it out to you and you see the rope, the snake is not there anymore. But you can appreciate it. You can appreciate what happened, and you can tell stories about it, right? Useful stories. You can remember, but you can't get the snake back. You squint your eyes. You know, Swamiji will do great, long stories as you're squinting as I'm trying to make the snake come back. You can't make the snake come back, you know? So the tenth man story, it's the same. When the tenth man recognizes I'm the tenth man, and that story that can be elongated for hours, you know. But when the tenth man recognizes that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you are the tenth man, he can't not be the tenth man. He can't go through the emotional trauma that he had gone through before. Sometimes when Swamiji tells the story, he'll have the tenth man when he was going through all that trauma beat his head against the tree out of sadness and grief and get a big bruise there and that type of thing. So he still has to heal his bruise and whatnot. But he can't get that trauma, the trauma of the drowned tenth man back. He can talk about it though and tell what it was like, but you can't recreate the experience. Once you know yourself, it is yourself, it's you. Once you recognize your being, the changelessness of your being, the ubiquitous, the oneness of your being, you can't not see it. Right? And so, and the ajnani can't see what you see. Right? And so the reality that the ajnanis are walking around in, the jnani can appreciate it through memory, but not through experience. You know, not through experience. Even if your mind is acting up, or you're behaving like an ajnani. For some of you as jnana nishtha, you still aren't doing that. Your mind has this problem or that problem. But the one who is the self of the mind is not changing. Right? So yourself is what we call aproksha. Aproksha means it's self-evident. It's self-evident, the self is self-evident to the ajnani. Right? You don't doubt yourself that you're here, I'm here. Right? The same self is self-evident to the jnani. It's just that the self-evident self, by self-evident means I'm an existent conscious being. That's self-evident. You don't have to prove that to me. But the ajnani superimposes a lot of things on that self-evident self. The jnani doesn't. The jnani recognizes the self-evident self, the self-evident me, as being the same in all beings, as being limitless, as being changeless. Recognizes it not as an intellectual superimposition on the fact, but recognizes, wow, I am here and I never change. The ajnani says, I am here and I always change. The jnani says, I am here and I never change. Both are referring to themselves, their self-experience. So say you take yourself to be an ajnani, you say, I am here and I'm always changing. You're talking about you. That you that you're talking about is aproksha. It's immediate, it's direct, right? It's doesn't need somebody to come and illumine it. It doesn't need another light. It's self-evident. So the ajnani says, I am here, I'm always changing, and I'm subject to death. The jnani says, I am here, and I am the constant. The mind and the body and the sense organs are subject to death and change, and they are always changing. I'm not. And then talks to the ajnani and says, you have to recognize that or you're really in trouble. The ajnani will say, you know, that's your situation too. But because that viveka is not there, that knowledge is not there, you have this aviveka. You haven't recognized that you're not changing at all. You need to recognize that. Right? But until it's recognized, until a person recognizes that, then they are walking around in the samsara, in the darkness of ignorance, in the darkness of self-ignorance. Right? And walking around, all the beings walking around in the darkness of that self-ignorance, the jnani is seen clearly. Right? But conversely, that which the beings who are walking around in that darkness are seeing, the jnani doesn't see that. Because of the paramartha, what the one has paramartha jnanam, knowledge of what is the absolute reality of your being, and the other doesn't. But the self experience is the same. Okay. Simple. Too simple. I said that to Swamiji once. I said, this knowledge is really simple, isn't it? He said, that is the problem. That is the problem. It's so real, it's so simple that the mind has to unwind. It has to unwind so many notions to get to just the simple fact of your own presence. Because some words have been big words. Could it simply be simply me? If I simply recognize me, myself, what is that? In terms of Mahatma and the enlightened being and you know, all of these things. That's why sometimes with this tenth man story, that, you know, when the tenth man recognizes, you know, I'm the tenth man, that tenth man now is enlightened, right? Does that tenth man feel like running around telling everybody how special? I'm so special because I recognized I'm the tenth man, when actually the problem, when you see it, the problem is so... It's so ridiculous. You know, it's so ridiculous that the mistake can be made. And Shankara, in his Brahma Sutras, in his introduction to the Brahma Sutras, it's called the Adhyasa Bhasha, he starts out saying, how could it be, you know, how is it possible for something, for a mistake like this to take place? You know, how can it be? And yet, You know, here it is. Because it's so obvious. It's so obvious when it's pointed out. Because the I, he uses the word I and thou. I and thou. I can never be, we would think of it more, there's reasons for saying thou, but just make it clear. I and that. I can never be that. I can never be the that, which is something objectifiable and subject to change. It's like light and darkness. There's no possibility of me being something that I can objectify and goes through change. It's not possible. Okay. So how does that happen then? How is it possible that I can make that mistake? That's how he starts his Vidyasa Bhasha. It's very beautiful. Beginningless mistake. It's a beginningless mistake. Okay, let's take that. Here. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.